Back in 2003 and 2004, Gunnar Hand was fresh out of college. He took his first planning job in Joplin, Missouri. He rented a nice apartment. It was walking distance from where he'd go to work out and buy his groceries. This past semester, when he went back to Joplin for the first time, this time as an instructor, with his group of urban planning students, he noticed something. His old building was gone. Not a trace. I'm Jabalani LaFall, and on today's Central Standard, we'll speak with UMKC instructors and urban planning students about the Rebuild Joplin Studio project. For those working on it, they quickly learned that this project is more than just planning and design. There's real suffering happening right now. So we'll hear their ideas for creating a new and more resilient Joplin, from green spaces to green streets to memorials. That's all ahead on Central Standard after this hour's news. Good morning, Kansas City. We all watched in horror and awe when a tornado swept through Joplin, Missouri, destroying lives, property, and an American town. We all watched with delight and adulation as the volunteers and rescue teams from all over the country and world converged to help. And now, for Joplin survivors, the story isn't so much about destruction now, but about the triumph of the human spirit and rising out of the wreckage. Peace by peace. Welcome to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Today we get an update on Joplin's cleanup and the rebuilding in earnest of this Missouri town. And joining us live are Gunnar Hand. He's an instructor at UMKC, president of the Mock Studios, and taught a design class there at UMKC on the Joplin cleanup. Jacob Wagner, associate professor of UMKC Urban Studies Department, oversees the department and had taught similar disaster studio classes for the destruction down in New Orleans with Hurricane Katrina. And we got some students in the house, students of life. Jared Daniel, a senior in the urban planning student. Welcome.
Thank you.
And Sean Connolly. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
And Gunnar and Jake. Welcome.
Good morning.
Morning.
So, Gunnar, tell us about Joplin.
Well, Joplin's a town in southwest Missouri. It's about 50,000 people. It's the regional hub of southwest Missouri, just outside of Springfield, and really close to the Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Kansas border. Like I said, it's the regional hub, so it contains most of the healthcare and retail for a population of about 200,000, 250,000 people.
What about your Joplin?
My Joplin.
The Joplin that you remember.
Well, my first job out of college was with the Harry S. Truman Coordinating Council, which is the regional planning council down there. I was a community planner, and I sort of built a life for myself coming from Boulder, Colorado, that was walkable. I found a place where I could walk to the store and walk to work out. It was unfortunately a short drive because at that time they did not have bus service to my work. And when I returned this past summer to visit my friends, maintain those relationships I had, but also see what I could do from a planning perspective in Joplin, I realized quite quickly that entire neighborhood was gone.
And what was your reaction to it? How did it make you feel, both from a human perspective and what you're looking at now as a designer?
Well, I certainly had a visceral response to the disaster when I saw it. It was about a month after it had happened, so there was definitely still a lot of debris down there. They had started the cleanup. I think as a planner, you always look from a bird's eye view. So I saw where those landmarks were, probably better than, you know, the average person would. But at the same time, I think you're really in shock and awe, and you just try to soak it all up. And I think my first response was, we got to do something. And so I tried to, that's when I came back up to Kansas City and asked UMKC if they wanted to do a studio down there.
And you asked UMKC if they wanted to do a studio. Speaking of which, let's bring in Jacob Wagner. You've had experience with Hurricane Katrina. Jacob, what's the concept around disaster recovery planning at the studio level?
The concept is basically to give students a real-life experience, a real-time experience. We don't you know, do projects that are theoretical or hypothetical, but try to get students immediately engaged in something that's real time, where there's a real need from the community to have technical assistance, to have design work, basically to have the kind of research they otherwise would not have if the students were not engaged.
You're a veteran of one of the worst natural disasters in American history, Hurricane Katrina. How does that experience inform both your class teaching and what you are planning to do in helping with Joplin?
You know, I didn't set out to be a veteran of two fronts, but I guess that's a good way to put it. You know, I think the experience in New Orleans, I think we're going to be learning from New Orleans for decades to come. And to apply that knowledge to Joplin is critical. Every disaster is a learning opportunity. In our research in New Orleans, we found that a disaster is a design moment, a moment when people come in and think about things they never would have thought about before. It involves serious restructuring of a city, and we wanted to apply that experiential knowledge and to assist with Joplin the best that we could.
Going back to Katrina and then bringing it forth to Joplin, how did your class assist with New Orleans?
We started off with an urban planning studio just a few months after Hurricane Katrina in January 2006. And that work was funded by U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. And we were able to take students from Kansas City down to New Orleans several times. We worked directly with neighborhoods on neighborhood planning recovery, and we focused on the role of culture and local identity in rebuilding. Because one of the critical things that happens in a disaster is it's traumatic. You know, people can't tell where they are. Their everyday landmarks are gone, and those landmarks that are still there become even more important, and people are trying to figure out what the new normal is. And so in that process, you have to be sensitive to local place and the characteristics that help stabilize people's sense of identity and self and give them a reason to rebuild. And so that's critical. You can't just come in and treat it as a clean slate and, you know, expect everybody to move on because everyone's still dealing with that tragedy. So that's kind of what we learned in the process of working in New Orleans.
Gunnar, Jacob talked about the new normal, dealing with the new normal and retaining the character of the city. What is involved, Gunnar, in essentially building a whole new town from scratch, even though the whole town wasn't destroyed? You're building a whole new town from scratch, essentially, in character.
Well, I think that's one of the things the students brought to light in this process was they were focusing quite a bit on just the disaster area and how do we rebuild this relatively small portion of the larger region. And it was a regional disaster. It wasn't just Joplin. It was the city of Duquesne, parts of Jasper County and Newton County that were destroyed. And so the students tried to bring a regional solution to the problem. And I think what that ended up doing was looking at places outside of the disaster area. How can we use this to improve our downtown? How can we take this attention that's on Joplin and really focus in on thinking big again about what not just our city but our region could be down there? And they did a really good job. I think in terms of the new normal, it's difficult because these people, most of them drive through it every day. And they see relatively, at this point, slow progress. And for them, they have to relive all of those memories every day because there's just such a large expanse of nothing in the heart of their city.
You know, Jacob, there was a exhibit at the Lidi Vocos Art Gallery in the Crossroads here where Kansas City artists exhibited works based on debris
from the
Joplin disaster, toys,
tree
branches, different elements of nature, different elements of lives lost, different elements of lives now needing to be rebuilt. What is similar in character between New Orleans and Joplin now as you look at Joplin?
You're dealing with a similar trauma. It's a matter of scale. You know, you have the disorientation that occurs with the disaster and the cleanup. You have a certain smell in the city. You have a certain sense of the visceral intensity of being in a disaster zone. You know, speaking of the role of art, A guy named Paul Chan did a version of Waiting for Godot in New Orleans, and he did it set in some of the most devastated neighborhoods. You could do the same thing in Joplin right now and in that area that's been impacted. So, you know, art can help to reveal that commonality of human experience and facing what seems to be absurd, what seems to be overwhelming, beyond comprehension. And so I think that's the challenge. And Joplin, you know, it can be overwhelming in the same sense that folks in New Orleans felt overwhelmed by Katrina.
We did have Joplin artists on here as well, talking about how to rebuild that life and create new life through the art and
the role
incorporate
of art.
That into
right.
rebuilding. Critical. Rebuilding Joplin and the latest on what UMKC professors and students are doing to help. That's our topic today. You're listening to Central Standard on KCUR and KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Our guests are Gunnar Hand. He's an instructor at UMKC and once lived in Joplin and returned to find the place that he once knew completely wrecked. And we also have Jacob Wagner, a veteran of the Hurricane Katrina, and an urban studies professor at UMKC runs the department. And we have students, Jared Daniel and Sean Connolly. Kansas City, do you have ideas for rebuilding a resilient Joplin? What type of city would you like to see it grow into? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Or shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org. Facebook is also an option there for you to join the conversation. Jared, Sean, was it difficult emotionally to deal with the loss and conceptualize it as students as you're looking to rebuild? We'll start with Jared.
Well, I think it's a completely different perspective. We come in with the idea that we're here to help, to do what we can, but I don't think we have necessarily that we've lived it, we've experienced it. So it's a different kind of reaction. But at the same time, you get very emotionally invested. You can obviously see the devastation, and you can see the impact that it had on the residents. So I think that it very quickly ties in, and we very quickly become a part of that moment.
Sean, what are some of the specific areas you looked at in your class, and how do you reconcile that, taking off the human emotional hat, putting on the urban planner hat?
Well, when we went down there for our first studio trip together, we saw the devastation as it was cleared. We didn't see it immediately after the tornado, myself personally, and so you could see basically a scar across the city, and you could just see the massive wreck it left, really, of how, and that was, it was just, you saw the impact on a massive scale, I guess. And not being a part of this city, it was kind of tough to get into, but we met with Gary Box, a member of the Chamber of Commerce, and when we were speaking with him, he had to take a second, you know, he got teary-eyed, he almost couldn't speak to us, and that was maybe one way we were able to connect, because we hadn't seen any kind of personalization to this disaster, and he had friends he had lost, and he even mentioned that he was driving through a familiar part of the city with him, and he couldn't tell where he was.
Gunnar Hand, that's the challenge, isn't it? When you go into a town where lives have been destroyed, and you're looking to plan, but they're still grieving.
Yeah, I think as a planner, you always try to see far, far in advance. It's a long-term profession, and I think the challenge really was how do we connect with the stakeholders on the ground, and how do we incorporate them in our planning process and make sure that we're doing what they want us to do. And I think it's very sensitive moment still in Joplin. You know, we gave our final presentation about a week and a half ago down in Joplin, and we sort of presented this as an opportunity to think about things that they hadn't thought about before, to think on a regional scale, to think about these new community amenities they want to bring in to Joplin. And I think that they were still very sensitive about looking at it as an opportunity. They are still in the grieving process. And Gary is a great example of that. He has been with us from pretty much the very beginning. He helped us lay a lot of the groundwork down in Joplin because I think he saw the value that the students could bring overall in terms of bringing new ideas and doing some research for them. And Yeah, it was definitely a turning point when we went down there. And, you know, Gary used to be a policeman before that, or I think after that, he worked for the gas company down there reading meters. So he had a very intricate knowledge of the lay of the land. And when he couldn't picture where he was in the city the night of the tornado, I think it really devastated him. And I think he admitted he had post-traumatic stress disorder more so than he did after Vietnam.
Jacob, we hear the story about a Vietnam vet, Gary Box, who's basically a town father of Joplin, everything from a cop to Chamber of Commerce. And he's standing up and trying to stand firm in the face of this disaster. Seeing that, did you want to assure your students on this project that it was more than just a project? Tell us about the tour of the wreckage, how you prepared for it, and how it now informs your process.
That's a great question. You know, I think seeing someone like Gary, you know, and his experience really made it more than, you know, a class assignment. And that's always what we're aiming for. These are young planning professionals. They're going to go out and work for communities. And these are communities that are suffering and have experienced, you know, something that none of us want to go through. So it's a reality check. We had toured the disaster area several times before we took the students down. We had spent quite a bit of time learning from the different folks down there what had occurred. We had the students talk with different stakeholders, including Gary and some other leaders, before we went through the area that was devastated. And then we kind of walked them through that space. And we also took them through a regional tour of the broader Joplin so they could see what had happened in the larger context, because that's the challenge of scale. You're always thinking from, you know, the house to the block to the district to the citywide to the region. And so getting the students to see this larger place and just learning a new city, it's always a lot of work. So,
Jared, what sense of purpose did you leave with personally, and how did you apply what you learned academically?
It's much more than just the affected area specifically. As Jacob said, it's a regional context. There's a lot of constraints that exist in the area. Joplin has a legacy of lead mining, for instance. There's a lot of lead waste and chat piles still in the area. These are things that also affect the region much, including the tornado. So it was very much a holistic approach. It wasn't just rebuilding the scar. It was really taking into context the existing conditions and what constraints are put upon the city through those.
Sean, what stuck out for you?
I think when we first went down, we noticed that, well, it's kind of easy to see, but the scar of the tornado runs east to west across the city, and it travels across basically their main corridor. And that was something that we kind of looked at as our main approach. So we connected the city east to west. We took the destroyed parts of Joplin and connected it to Duquesne. And so it was basically the scar that the tornado created, created this kind of a view corridor. Like I said, everything was cleared when we first went down. So it was hard for me to see it as something that was not a blank slate, because it literally looked like a blank slate. So seeing that like that made me had to get that in my mind that people, you know, live there and had experienced things there. So I wanted to take that connection approach to sort of rebuild what people had lost, but in a more efficient way.
Gunnar, Sean mentions the scar of the tornado. The scar of the tornado, meaning the wreckage that was left in its wake, you know, the pulled up earth, all of the debris, the line that it traveled. You're actually trying to, in healing those scars, actually looking at the actual semantic nomenclature of that in the design process?
Yeah, I think we had a hard time describing it, and we didn't want to be so blunt as to call it a scar. In fact, that's a lot what I think the people down in Joplin ended up saying, quite honestly. But I think, again, it's always about how you present something or how you phrase something. And so we wanted to, again, sort of not put a positive spin on it so much as try to make it an opportunity for future growth and development. And so for us, you know, we toyed with disaster area or tornado path or even scar, but I think we ended up just calling it a spade a spade, and it was the tornado path for us. And it is 6 miles long and 1 mile wide. It was a big, big disaster.
6 miles long and 1 mile wide. 816-235-2888. 816-235-2888. Call in with your ideas on how to rebuild Joplin. If you were down there, if you went down there to help, your stories would be appreciated and would add to the fervor of this conversation as we're looking to rebuild. We're going to go to Kathy in Lawrence. Kathy, welcome to
hi.
Central Standard.
Hi. My name's Kathy. And about a year before the tornado hit, my daughter had been going to a college about an hour away and was involved in a traumatic accident. She was taken to St. John Medical Center. And I was absolutely amazed at the level of care she received within all the way down there from Lawrence. We were thinking that this was going to be a life-changing incident for her. And within less than a half hour of our arrival, we were talked to by a doctor who showed us x-rays, who reassured us. This was a Sunday morning early. And within 4 hours, four specialists had checked her out and done thorough examinations of her. She received an amazing and considerate level of care, as did we. Everybody was wonderful to us and so considerate of our needs as people from being out of town. It was just devastating to me, you know, as a mom, thinking about, you know, that my daughter was there and look at what this community now has lost, you know, a good part of what provides care for so many of them in their greatest time of need. And my hope for Joplin is that they are able to rebuild St. John's in all of its glory, because it's an absolutely amazing medical center, and I'm just thrilled at how they took care of us.
Thank you for your story, Kathy. Kathy's story brings up an interesting point. She lauded the medical care of her child when her child got into an accident, and she mentioned St. John's Hospital. And that's been a major theme in a lot of the news reports, a major theme in a lot of the people that went down there to help with the wreckage and help with the rescue efforts and help with the relief efforts. So tell us about the hospital site, Gunner, and why that struck a chord with people such as Kathy, and why that strikes a chord when you're in the middle of a disaster area with basically on-the-go triage units and emergency services.
Well, St. John's Mercy is, you know, one of the two regional hospitals in Joplin. It's one of their larger economic sectors in Joplin. So it did have a huge impact. I think, you know, FEMA was there less than 24 hours afterwards rebuilding a temporary site for the hospital that still exists today. They're already sort of putting in plans in the works, and this is something the students took in consideration with their final plan. They're actually going to move St. John's Medical Center to Interstate 44 right on Main Street. So it becomes this new sort of southern anchor as a counterpoint to downtown Joplin, which is also on Main Street in between roughly, let's say, 1st and 7th Street.
Is this because the old site is no longer feasible?
Well, the old site has a couple of problems. As a old mining town, there's a lot of old mines underneath. And one of the reasons they haven't imploded the building that you see so often in the media is they're afraid if they drop that building, it'll collapse those mines, and then that site will permanently be unusable. So I think that they're still trying to figure out what they're going to do down there seismically and move that forward. But I think, you know, St. John's has already announced they're going to spend roughly $1 billion to rebuild not just a new medical center, but become sort of a national institute of some kind.
Jacob, from an urban planning perspective, the area in and around the hospital, he mentioned Highway 44 being the new southern anchor. What goes into that from a planning perspective?
Well, if you think about what's around a hospital, you know, in New Orleans, we worked with another hospital area in the middle of a neighborhood, and you have all the offices. You have all the, you know, companion uses that want to be close to the hospital. And so one of the challenges, if you look at all the businesses that were destroyed in Joplin, a good number of those were medical related because they were close to that hospital and they were, it's a proximity thing. And so now what you've got to do is, as you're restructuring, and if you're pulling out a hospital in the middle of the city and moving it south of the city, there's other uses that are going to go with it. So there's some real challenges. There's some environmental challenges. You know, the students' research, they uncover that there's some unique ecosystems adjacent to the new site. So there's going to be some issues in terms of mitigating and preventing that kind of impact.
What were those unique ecosystems, Jarrett?
Shirt glades, for instance. This is an ecosystem that...
Glades?
Yes, shirt glades. There's about 60 acres worldwide. 28 are in southwest Missouri, most of which are in Joplin. It's basically thin soil with rocky outcroppings and short stunted trees. Like I said, it's a unique ecosystem, one that is adjacent to the new hospital site.
And how does that present a challenge?
I think very much that the hospital and the forthcoming development needs to recognize how important those ecosystems are to the region.
Like you said, thin soil.
Yes, yes. And to engage in perhaps environmental stewardship and engage in partnerships with those organizations that are already set up to help protect those sites for sustainability, to have access to those resources for future generations.
Rebuilding Joplin and the latest on what UMKC professors and students are doing to help, that's our topic today. We've been talking with Gunnar Han. He's an instructor at UMKC and president of the Mock Studios. And Jacob Wagner is an associate professor also at UMKC, the Urban Studies Department. He's the head of that department. And we have students Jarrett Daniel and Sean Connolly. Meanwhile, Kansas City, what are your ideas for rebuilding a resilient Joplin? What kind of city would you like to see it grow to become? Give us a call at 816-235-2888, 816-235-2888, or shoot us an email as we go into break on centralstandard@kcur.org. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Warm thoughts, holiday wishes, and prayers are with the people of Joplin as they look to rebuild their lives in town. Apropos, rebuilding Joplin and the latest on what UMKC professors and students are doing to help is our topic today. Our guests are Gunnar Han, an instructor at UMKC, and Jacob Wagner, also associate professor there at UMKC in the Urban Studies Department. And we have students Jarrett Daniel and Sean Connolly. Kansas City, what are your ideas for rebuilding a stronger, more resilient Joplin? What kind of city would you like to see it grow into? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. We're also at centralstandard@kcur.org. We're going to go straight to Carmen in Merriam. Carmen, welcome to Central Standard.
Thank you. Great show. My question is along the same lines as the environmental stewardship that was just mentioned, and I wanted to know, since we have the prototype of a community in Greensburg, how does a community decide to go green, number one, and are there matched funds, or is it a government project that pays for that choice? Or, and that's my question, did Joplin want to go green? And if so, are they able to? And how do those funds come about?
Does Joplin want to go green is the question on the floor from Carmen. She mentions the disaster out in Kansas, the Greensburg disaster. You mentioned the glades and the environmental stewardship and the eco buzzwords, Jarrett. You're on.
I think that definitely Joplin does want to go green. Part of the challenge is they don't necessarily know what that means. They understand these buzzwords, but they don't necessarily know what that is in physical form. And part of our job is to illustrate that, to show them what that means, what that looks like, what that feels like. So they do want to go green, but it's a challenge, and that's part of our job is to show them what that is like.
And speaking of going green, Gunnar and Jacob, part of the conceptual design of the project was creating this green way. This green way. What is the green way?
Well, the Memorial Greenway is something the students came up with when they were developing various alternatives early on in the semester, and it sort of was one of those things that just stuck. In particular, it was actually a very influential idea or intervention that came out of that they introduced to the American Institute of Architects-sponsored two-day charrette that happened in Joplin in October, which eventually got into a final report and was presented to the city council. It was their way to create an east-west connection across the entire path of the tornado that was more or less a centralizing theme, an organizing principle where you could rebuild around this greenway. It could be passive and active recreation. It could be a place of reflection, but it also could be a development incentive.
And is Joplin well suited for this? You've worked, Jacob, in New Orleans, and you've looked at feasibility studies in a lot of urban environments. Is Joplin suited for this?
One of the challenges, what we did in the studio was to develop scenarios. And the worst case scenario in a disaster recovery process is basically an unplanned scenario where you get some houses coming back and other houses don't, and then you have vacant lots and it starts to look completely unorganized. So you've got to preempt that reality by saying, hey, look, if you don't want the jack-o'-lantern scenario with the missing teeth in your neighborhoods, then you've got to have a deliberate approach to rebuilding blocks of housing at a time rather than one house here, one house there. The Greenway was a way of looking at that six-mile path that was 1 mile wide and saying, okay, we're not going to be able to build every house back. We already know there's people who are relocating, they're rebuilding somewhere else. So what do you do? What do you do with those parcels that are not going to get rebuilt, where there was people who are underinsured or elderly folks who are now not able to go back to their house and they have to go somewhere else? And so the Greenway was a way to have a real strategy of recovery that dealt with those edges between where there's existing neighborhood and where there's destroyed blocks.
And how was that proposal, that concept proposal of the Greenway in Joplin received in Joplin?
I think, as you know, I think it's one of those things where it's early and they're beginning to think, okay, all right, we've got to deal with this. But they know from the beginning when we've been down there, ideas like that have been well received because they know they have to do something. They know that they can't just kind of let it happen on its own. They know they're going to have to engage larger developers. They're going to have some kind of a vision and a plan. And there was quite a bit in the citizen advisory recovery team documents that we read and the meetings that we saw. There was a real desire to maintain walkable Joplin. If you look at the neighborhoods that were hit, they were early 20th century bungalow neighborhoods. They were already built for walking. And so people want that kind of quality of life back.
816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. We want to hear your thoughts on rebuilding Joplin. Should it go green? Should it go back to the way it was? How do you rebuild a more resilient city? Daniel writes into us at centralstandard@kcur.org to ask, much of the housing was destroyed by low income, he says. How much consideration is being given to replacing the low income housing in particular and environmental justice in general? Jacob, we're back to that theme. Rebuilding and keeping the ecosystem intact.
Right. And the challenge of a disaster is always the challenge of the folks who have the fewest resources, right? So in a situation like this, you have to think about equity, not just ecological or economic growth. And that's the challenge of sustainability. So in this context, you know, the students' research uncovered that there was already a housing crisis in the region, that homelessness was on the rise before the tornado hit. And so housing, you know, these crises, they destroy housing units. So automatically you have a housing crisis overnight on top of what was already there. So as far as our thinking on that, what we were trying to do was to use the tragic opportunity of the disaster to refocus people's attention to parts of the city that were neglected. So part of the scenario that we presented to folks in Joplin was, hey, what if you use this as a chance to rebuild and redensify around downtown? You know, Joplin has a substantial downtown. There's room in older neighborhoods around downtown for new construction right now on existing sites. And so there are places that could be rebuilt with higher density housing that could immediately address the needs for affordable housing.
Gunnar, there are lots and lots of stakeholders here, from the people that lost their homes to the transportation authorities and people to the housing authorities to the Army Corps of Engineers, the EPA, just about everybody and their mama, as they say. What were the findings of the American Architecture Institute when they came down there and hosted that two-day summit, which included students from Missouri State, KU, K-State, some of the students from your class in school? What were the findings there?
Well, I think the charrette was a really interesting experience for the students. A lot of them had not participated in something like that before, and
And tell us what a charrette is.
Well, a charrette is basically where you bring stakeholders and designers together and you try to illustrate their ideas. So it's basically a workshop where we present ideas, we go through different concepts, and then at the end you try to make plans and draw drawings and illustrate these things that came out of what is the CART process, the Citizens Advisory Recovery Team process. And what came of it is we had about a 2-month jump on everybody there because we had been doing our research and working on it. A lot of these designers had just sort of come in for that 2-day period. So the students that were there had a lot of information, knew the ground a lot better, I think, than most people there, because there is not a very large design community from Joplin. There's only a couple of architecture firms down there. And I think ultimately what came from it was this idea that it was more than the scar. It needed to be about the Main Street corridor and about downtown as well. And also, I think, you know, the students pushed they hadn't fully developed it at the time, but they had some sort of east-west corridor, new type of greenway boulevard thing, whether it was functioning as a stormwater management system or a recreation trail or both, was something that they were kind of influential on. And that ultimately came out of all the different groups.
Jared Daniel, bringing the students back in, you're a senior at UMKC in the Urban Planning Studies. What did you learn from these workshops about the rebuilding of a city or about how a city works that you previously did not know?
Trick question, I think.
Good question.
Seems pretty straightforward to me. What did you know that you didn't know before?
I think how much... information is really required to make sensible and realistic plans. We came in with, like I said, maybe more knowledge than most, but definitely not comprehensive. And there was a lot of design professionals that may not have known specifics about Joplin, but they knew specifics about their design profession and their niche. And all those came together, and they fed off each other, and it became kind of just this soup that really brought a lot of ideas that otherwise would not have come out.
And Sean Connolly, what did you learn from the soup of ideas, as it were?
Really, it's sort of impossible as a designer who lives, you know, outside of a community to have detailed knowledge of the place you're working in. So you get there. You present your ideas, but they're always most critically critiqued by the people who live there and know the area well. So it's the amount of intimate knowledge that's presented at these things that helps, because you can't get that from an outside perspective.
This is a very practical project, as you mentioned before, Jacob. Lots of stakeholders, lots of emotion involved in rebuilding a city. Are most urban studies programs like those of UMKC, what they call practicum in the academic world, getting out there and actually seeing how things work?
the structure of our urban planning and design program is very much organized around that studio framework, but not everybody. In fact, as an undergraduate design-based program in urban planning and design, we're probably one of about five programs in the nation. And so a lot of programs are graduate planning programs that are policy-oriented. But the planning profession recognizes that students need to be engaged in community projects as part of their education. So even in programs that may be more policy-based, you do have these workshop-type courses. The sort of what we like to think is the win-win of our program is that we've got both the policy and the design focus, and we're engaged with these real-time community projects.
Gunnar, as part of the efforts to rebuild here in Joplin or even in Detroit, which isn't so much a natural disaster, but an economic disaster where they actually went in and tore down homes. And we look at New Orleans and we look at some of the communities that are being developed around the country. It's part of efforts to rebuild, examining what doesn't work as well?
Absolutely. I think there's certain components of a city that I think can always be improved. And that's ultimately something that I think any planner will try to do. Our profession always asks the question, how can we make it better? And we're always refocusing on how we can improve existing systems and bring in new systems and sort of complement others. So I think that a real comprehensive look, which is what we encourage the students to do in Joplin, does look at, well, we have this manufacturing base in Joplin. How do we move them into what is the new green economy? How does that factor in? What sort of ideas, whether it's early education or, you know, focusing on the systems that are the businesses that do work there in terms of batteries or ball bearings for wind turbines and so on and so forth?
Speaking of batteries and ball bearings, it's kind of how that works. Things just kind of roll around and you're trying to find a more larger practical use for it. Speaking of which, the CART teams, the Citizens Action Recovery teams. How is that working?
Well, about a week after the disaster, the Joplin City Council set up the Citizen Advisory Recovery Team, and it was basically a compilation of all the different stakeholders they could get their hands on, whether it was the business community, elected officials, all the different municipalities that were impacted, but also just average citizens. And I think that goal was, they set that up in order to figure out what they were going to do as soon as FEMA left. FEMA, I think, has done a really good job of letting the community guide itself and simply support that effort. And that's what the CART was. And the CART had, you know, they're the ones who sponsored the two-day charrette. They're the ones who produced a final sort of recommendation to the city council on how to move forward. And they're the ones still there today, having all these meetings, working on the ground, trying to figure out different RFPs to rebuild the city and get things going. And they're probably going to be there forever. So I think of all things, you know, you created a stakeholder-based, community-based planning group that didn't exist before and hopefully will live on well past this.
What's the urban boundary of Joplin, Jacob Wagner, and what are the feelings about the fact that downtown wasn't destroyed and why they're rebuilding areas that weren't affected as well?
Well, you know, like we said before, it's that challenge of dealing with a region. You know, at the disaster itself struck south of downtown in an area that was a mix of older neighborhoods, of post-war, it hit kind of a big box district out on Rangeline. So it hit kind of a cross-section of every component in the city. And so the challenge then is to say, okay, where do we go from here? And that, you know, like I said, it creates a real challenge as far as figuring out the housing market. Where are people going? Where is housing needed? And so it's a balancing act. But the working with the Harry S. Truman Coordinating Council and the city and other regional stakeholders, it's clear that everyone has to pull together and kind of think about the impacts for the region. Our hope was that in thinking about resilience as a central concept, one of the components of resilience is your ability to say, okay, if we're going to bounce back from this disaster, you know, what? How do we rebuild a safer place? How do we use the resources we have? And that's why existing downtowns in the region, not just downtown Joplin, but Webb City over in Carthage, provide a place where you could think about rebuilding density of population.
Rebuilding Joplin and the latest on what UMKC professors and students are doing to help. That's our topic today on Central Standard. You are listening to Central Standard on KCUR and KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Our guests have been Gunnar Hand, an instructor at UMKC, Jacob Wagner, an associate professor and head of the Urban Studies Department there, and students Jared Daniel and Sean Connolly. Thank you all for joining us today on Central Standard, gentlemen, and good luck with this continuing recovery of Joplin.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Merry Christmas.
Holiday parties are in full swing this time of year, and that means perhaps more than anything else, food, food, and more food. But even more than that, holiday nourishment of the spirit.
Let's get right into it. It's that time of year. What are your must-haves for any great holiday party?
I think the most important thing is that it has to be doable, and it has to be enjoyable, because if doing your holiday party just adds to the stress and being overwhelmed from the season, then it's not going to be a happy occasion for anybody.
So what are the extras that you can do to make it more enjoyable and more special?
Well, one of the tips that I've posted this morning was have a house party the day before the party. And by house party, that means everybody in the house cleans during the party. So it's a house party to clean. Make sure that you just delegate and divide up the tasks and make it doable on yourself. Another thing that's kind of fun is don't sweat it if you don't clean the whole house. Just clean the areas where guests are going to be and then shut the doors to the other rooms and just try and make things doable and easier on yourself. Otherwise, you're just not going to enjoy the whole experience at all.
So specifically, what should people avoid doing when they're trying to plan a party for the holidays?
You know, all those wonderful, complicated dishes that are on the covers of the magazines that look so good. I saw one on the cover of Gourmet one year, and it took 7 hours to make. Don't do that. It looks great, but realize that you are one person and that you have probably one oven and only so many hours in a day, and just kind of plan things that are make ahead and plan things that are doable.
On that note, let's talk about holiday meals and treats. What festive foods should people try this year that aren't so complicated?
Right. There's two on the Central Standard site that I love. It's for our Christmas brunch, which is a meal a lot of us don't always think about when we're entertaining, but it's fun and festive. The first one is for eggnog French toast, which is incredibly easy and really good. It uses eggnog in the batter that goes on the toast. Real simple, real quick. And the other one's a little special. It's an herbed waffle, so a savory waffle. And it's real crisp and light. You put greens on that and smoked salmon and some creme fraiche, and it's delicious and really different for Christmas. One of the things that we like to do at our house is to have a soup party. So I can make ahead all the soups or chilies or stews and use a lot of crock pots and keep things warm. So that's all make ahead. People can serve themselves, and then I can put out a bunch of cookies. And then all the kids can decorate the cookies and everybody can help. And it's not so much stress on me because I'm not worried about doing all the cookies, baking everything, decorating everything, having it all perfect. Put down a drop cloth, let the sprinkles fly, worry about cleaning the vacuum out the day after. Mm-hmm. And just enjoy it and make sure it's fun and it's doable.
So are those the types of things to make it more of a memorable party than just your typical, you know, Christmas bash?
Right. I think people have that expectation that they put on themselves that I have to make this perfect and I have to do everything, and people are going to come to my house and they're going to be waited on. And that's not how. Maybe I'm a terrible hostess, but at my house, everybody's family. By the time that you're there for your second visit, you know where things are in my kitchen and you can help. And it doesn't make me the picture perfect hostess, but people come to my house and they can relax and they feel like family. And that's what holidays are for. Because if people are going to judge you or expect to be waited on, maybe those aren't the people you want to celebrate your holidays with.
So emphasis on important people and enjoying your time together. That's the real trick.
Make it meaningful. Make it simple. You know, these are the people that are going to love you if you burn dinner and order pizza, and it'll be this story that you laugh about years from now, and it's okay.
Looks like you don't need to be Martha Stewart to throw a perfect holiday party. That was Tamika Weatherspoon. She spoke with food writer and blogger Beth Bader for a holiday party planning tips for the rest of us. You can see Beth's recipes and plans on our website at kcur.org, also at centralstandard.org. And tune in tomorrow for advice on wrapping up something that isn't a present, but yet it's your 2011 tax returns. We'll hear all about how you can prepare your tax returns and breathe easy for the holiday season. We had help from the aforementioned multimedia intern for Central Standard, Tamika Weatherspoon. Our show is produced by Andrea Salinzi. And Up to Date is next with a look at the year's biggest religion stories with Brian Ellison. I'm Jabalani LaFall. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.